MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryan. It's just us. There's no producer, there's no guest producer, there's no nothing. Just a ghost in the chair.
Why is it whenever we're in this room, just the two of us, I go back to like elementary school or middle school and feel like we should just start drinking whiskey or something? What? Isn't that weird?
Yeah, well, I guess Jerry kind of provides like a teacher-like presence. And I guess Noel is kind of like a substitute teacher-like presence. So I didn't ever have the urge to drink whiskey in elementary school, but I can see where you're coming from. It was eighth grade before that started for me.
I didn't drink till college, but I don't know. It's just, and neither one of those, Jerry or Noel, would care even. It's just some weird thing about the teacher leaving the room. After all these years, I'm still like, all right, I need to act up.
Right. My thing went more toward paper airplanes than breaking out the pint bottle of whiskey I have in my sock.
No. Again, I didn't even drink until college, so of course I wasn't doing that. I just probably started joking around.
No, I know what you mean.
But today's Chuck would hit the bottle.
Right. Actually, today's Chuck is all business because I hate to tell you this, buddy, but you're doing your job right now.
That's true.
We both are, because this is our job, to podcast.
It's funny, during the Emily and Chuck pre-Oscars mini-crush show, it was kind of dragging on. She's like, this is starting to feel like a job. And I was like, this is my job.
This is the job.
Yeah.
The job. We talk about it like cops talk about their job.
Yeah,
the job.
It's the job.
We're real podcasters.
The job.
Remember that show, The Wire? Have you ever heard of it?
Oh, sure.
No, I'm just kidding. We've talked about it before.
Yeah.
But remember they called that one cop Real Police?
Yeah, Real Police.
I can't remember her name.
Yeah. They said that a lot on that show.
Yeah, but they mostly talked about one officer in particular.
As Real Police.
I'm trying to think of, yeah.
We're real, like, podcaster.
Right. There you go.
I love it.
So let's start real podcasting.
Is this one going to be a stinker?
No.
Okay.
It's not, actually. It's actually really... Do you know why? Because it has the hallmarks of a good episode. And I'm gonna peel the curtain back a little bit for everybody, Chuck.
Ooh.
One of the hallmarks of a good episode, at least of Stuff You Should Know, is that there is controversy associated with something, even where there doesn't seem to be.
Okay.
And that there are people who are either getting screwed over, suffering, being neglected, yeah, being abused. There is some group of people who the rest of the world aren't really thinking of, who are suffering at the hands of other people. And this episode has all that.
All right.
Surprisingly. I'll let you guys guess where that stuff comes in.
All right. So we're talking about false positives. And here's what that is. If you've ever been to the doctor, had a medical test done.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, well, not generally, always you will get one of four results.
Yeah, good point.
You can get a true positive. And remember, when you're getting a medical test back, positive is negative.
Yeah, it usually means bad news.
Yeah, positive is not good. They don't say, I have news, I have good news for you. Your results are positive. It's a little bit of a mind trick that you need to perform. But positive is you have this condition.
Right. It means that the test that searches confirmed. For a condition found a result.
Yes. It is so confirmed as yes.
Right. So that's
I should say.
That's a true positive, right?
Yeah. Then you got a true negative, which means you don't have this. However, if you're like me or probably you and most people, you say, that's good news, but I'd sure like to get a confirmation on that.
Yeah. How do you know? How do you know, Doc?
Then you can get a false positive, which is what we're talking about here.
Right.
Which is they say you have this condition. Like, let's say you have cancer. I'm sorry to tell you, but you don't, as it turns out later on, which is great.
Right.
False positives are kind of, they should call it the new lease on life result.
Right. The Dabney Coleman out of time result.
And then the worst of all, probably, is the
Agreed.
False negative.
Agreed, man. I'm glad you said that because this article just walks right past that fact.
Yeah. That means results say you're fine, but it turns out that you're not.
Yeah. You're toast.
So whatever the not even good avocado toast, your bad burnt toast.
Right, exactly. Terrible stuff with that really cheap sliced cheese that nobody would want to eat.
What's the opposite of a lease on life result?
Early death. Sudden early death out of the blue. Although there is something to be said about that, about just not knowing, right? Just out of nowhere, bam, you just fall over dead. That's not necessarily the worst way to go.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking more in the play on words of instead of a new lease on life, something to do with renting and your landlord.
So an old and we'll figure this one later and dub it in.
Wait, what's it called when you get kicked out of your apartment?
Oh, an old eviction of death.
God.
We did it, Chuck.
Oh, man.
So those are, if you take a test at the doctor, those are the four possible results you can get.
Correct.
What's really interesting here, and this is something that you're going to want to remember, and after you hear the rest of what we have to say, you're really going to want to remember this. But when you hear something like, this test that I'm about to give you is 99% accurate, it doesn't mean that if it comes back with a positive result that says you have this thing, it doesn't mean there's a 99% chance that you have that. It just means that when they say a test is 99% accurate, that if you do have that disease, there's a 99% chance that this test will catch it. Okay?
Yeah.
Huge, huge difference between those two things.
Yeah.
Okay? That's step one. So really what this is saying is that this test doesn't let very many false negatives get through. And if you look at the numbers, this is how that works out. If you have 10,000 people, Chuck,
okay,
and they take a test that's 99% accurate, and this is so 10,000 people, and 99% of them don't have this, and it's a 99% accurate test, there's going to be 100 that come back positive out of 10,000, okay? Yeah. 99 of those positive results are going to be true. One is going to be a false negative.
Okay.
Okay? 9,900 are going to be negative. They're going to come back negative.
Uh-huh.
9,801 are going to be true negatives.
Okay.
But 99 are going to actually be false positives, right?
Okay.
I know this is really mind-bending, but if you take the numbers like this, that means that only one out of 9,802 people had a false negative. So that's a big deal. As you said, that's the big daddy. That's the one you got to really watch out for.
Yeah.
But 99 out of 198 are false positives, which means that this 99% accurate test has a 50% chance of giving you a false positive if you come back positive. Should I just not even have said any of that stuff?
No, I think it's just funny that after 10 years, it's dawned on me that you have two true talents. One is explaining extremely complex things in a very easily digestible way.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is completely confusing me with the words that come out of your mouth.
Well, this is very confusing stuff. I mean, it's not just me. This is Bayesian statistics, basically.
Yeah, well.
the point of all of this is that, first of all, if your 99% accurate test comes back that says you have something, it doesn't mean you have a 99% chance of that you have it.
Yeah, very important.
Number one. Number two, if it does say you have it, there's a 50% chance that that test is wrong, even if it's a 99% accurate test. Okay?
Uh-huh.
That's a big thing to remember, that if your doctor doesn't explain that to you, you punch him or her in the arm.
Yeah.
And you say, you're not doing your job fully. Uh-huh. Because I'm scared, buddy. Yeah, I just got a positive test result, and I'm scared out of my mind. So if your doctor's not going to come for you, hopefully Bayesian statistics will. And don't listen to me. Go look it up yourself, because I'm sure someone else on the internet can explain it better than I can.
Perhaps Mr. Billy Bayes. In his whole statistical model.
Was he a character on Melrose Place?
I think so. He's okay. A pool cleaner. All right. So with medical testing, period, like you said, if your doctor's not telling you that, with any test that you take, not all medical tests are created equally. Some are really accurate. Some aren't as accurate as they well, that's about to say, so they could be. They're as accurate as they can be, which is to say maybe not as accurate as you would like it to be.
Sure.
But you really need to talk to your doctor, and hopefully they're offering this up anyway. Like, hey, what's the deal with this test? How reliable is this? Do I need to get a second test? Because the whole thing with false positives and false negatives, and even true positives and negatives, is there's a bunch of different reasons why follow-up testing is both good and bad. Like, sometimes these procedures, like the follow-up isn't like a pinprick.
Right.
Sometimes it's an actual surgical procedure.
Right.
That you may not need. A lot of times, and we'll get into these more specifically, but there's expense involved. A lot of times you didn't need to spend that money, but, you know, it's hard to say because you should be your own medical advocate and spend whatever money you can to ensure that the testing is reliable. And then there are things like the time that it takes between these things, like, all right, we'll see you. We need to follow this up with another test, but it's going to take 3 months to get you in. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, in those 3 months, you're stressing out. You're up all night. You can't sleep. Your sex drive is out the window.
Yeah.
That sounds like a silly thing to talk about, but it's a real thing.
Especially when you're grown-ups like us.
Yeah.
It's important.
But here's a study from 2009. So granted, this is a little old, but it's from the Annals of Family Medicine. And when it came to tests for prostate, lung, colorectal, and ovarian cancers, they found that false positives after four tests, they did tests, I think, either four tests or 14 tests. Mm-hmm. After four tests, you had about a 37% chance for men and a 26% chance for women for a false positive. And then the more tests you got, the more that went up, which is distressing.
It is. Something like if you had 14 tests, all 14 of the tests that they studied, you had a 60.4% chance for men and 48.8% chance for women of coming back with a false positive. And again, this isn't just like it's, yes, you have that new lease on life on the other side, but studies have shown like these getting a false positive result from a test, it can be emotionally devastating and it can have an impact on your finances if you're a Scrooge McDuck type who's only moved by the idea of money.
Well, and your physical health because mm-hmm. of stress.
Yeah, because it's not like you're not addicted to Manwich in the time just because you're stress eating the whole time. So that's not good for you.
What was Manwich?
Manwich, it was a canned Sloppy Joe starter.
Okay, I know it's a meal.
And, well, it's more than a meal.
A sandwich is a sandwich, but a Manwich is a meal.
Oh, that's right. I got it wrong.
You're like, no, it's more than a meal even.
Right. It's even greater than the ads prophecy.
So the financial costs, like you were talking about, Scrooge McDuck, they did another study of about 1,000 people. And this was in December of 2004 in the issue of Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention.
That is a legit journal just by the title.
Oh, for sure. Wait. And then it says, and wakeboarding. That's weird. more than 40% of participants had at least one false positive. 83% of these people went on to receive additional care at a cost of about $1,000 for women and about 1,100 for men. So that's not chump change.
No, it's not. And a lot of people say, well, who cares? I got insurance. Well, the healthcare spending is kind of a problem in this country. There's apparently in 2005, the National Academy of Sciences, big shout out to them, they found that there was 30% of healthcare spending was wasteful in the United States. 30% in 2005. And the idea of that gave rise to something. There's a campaign called Choosing Wisely. Have you heard of that?
No.
So it's a campaign called Choosing Wisely. They have a site called choosingwisely.org. It's a joint effort between the American Board of Internal Medicine, so it's physician-based, and Consumer Reports. And they're basically saying, like, there are a lot of unnecessary tests being performed out there that are leading to these unnecessary surgeries, unnecessary expenses, unnecessary anxiety. And we want to figure out what they are, and we want to start advising people against them, or at least advising doctors to advise their patients against them, because they might be unnecessary. And so this campaign has really kind of had a big impact, as we'll talk about in a little bit. You know, the idea of breast cancer screening has changed. The recommendations have changed. From what I understand from this Choosing Wisely campaign, has really kind of just shifted things from, well, this overabundance of caution can't be harmful, to actually there are some harms involved in an overabundance of caution. Let's kind of streamline our caution and make it a little more laser focused.
Should we take a break?
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a break, and I'll hit you with a stat right out of the gate when we come back.
Boom.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so before break, you were talking about breast cancer and mammograms in particular. And there was a study a few years ago in 2015, mm-hmm. 2015,
yeah,
about false positive mammograms and breast cancer overdiagnoses alone at $4 billion a year.
Billion.
So it's just such a fine line of striking the right note with preventative care and over-diagnoses.
Yeah, and here's the problem. Like, the tests, it's not like they are not out there saving people's lives.
Yeah.
It's not like the people like Dr. Papanikolaou, who came up with the pap smear, said, oh, man, this is going to be like a cash register for Western medicine.
Right.
That's not what these tests were designed for. Unfortunately, they are used in some circumstances like that. In probably more circumstances than that, they're used, again, out of an overabundance of caution because no doctor wants to be responsible for missing something in their patient and it leading to their patient dying. So they're using this overabundance of caution. The problem is that the tests aren't 100% infallible. They do have they do have accuracy problems, and some tests are better than others, or another way to put it, some tests are worse than others as far as false positives go. And take the pap smear in particular. With the pap smear, it looks for precancerous cervical cells, right? 3 million women in the United States get a positive pap smear result. From what I understand, every year, only 3,000 of them have a deadly cervical cancer. And that 40% of women will get a false pap smear in their lifetime. But here's the thing. 4,000 women who die in the U.S. every year from cervical cancer, most of them did not have a pap smear or hadn't gotten a pap smear in the last 5 years. So there's a really, there's a tough relationship between using the tests and overusing the tests. And for every, say, I think 2,000 women who undergo a mammogram, one woman's life is saved. Well, yeah. Those 2,000 women, they didn't know whether it was going to be whether they were going to be the one whose life was saved or not. So that to them or to their doctor, it was worth it. Unfortunately, 200 of them will get false positives, and 10 of them will undergo unnecessary surgeries, painful unnecessary surgeries to remove non-cancerous suspicious cells in their breasts. So there's this idea where yes, we need to use these tests. And then there's also this idea where we need to use these tests better or come up with more accurate tests.
Yeah. I mean, in particular, mammograms and screening for colorectal cancer are two of the big ones that can show a lot of false positives. And they're sort of under the microscope as to how we can correct this moving forward. For instance, mammograms correctly identifies breast cancer 84% of the time. However, if you're a younger woman, or if you have very dense breasts, you're more likely to have a false positive. And so because of this, over the past like even 10 to 15 years, they've changed the recommended age a few times for when you should start getting these mammograms. It's gone from, I think in 2009, they recommended between 50 and 74. Then I think it went down between, I think it went all the way down to 40 at one point.
40 was where it started, I think.
Oh, where it started, then up to 50.
Right.
And now, I think this is the latest, as of a few years ago, the American Cancer Society said, if you are at average risk, and this is probably how they should do it, and not just a sweeping age.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're at average risk, you should start at 45 annually. But you could begin as early as 40. And I would guess that means if it runs in your family.
Right.
Exactly. And then after 55, every other year. Like Emily's mom and my mom both went through breast cancer.
Oh, man.
So Emily started getting mammograms, I think at maybe even at 40,
mm-hmm.
because she was in the higher risk group.
Right. Smart.
Yeah, and they're no fun to go through, but she is, I think Emily has a good head on her shoulders as far as
sure.
advocating for herself, but also not going off the deep end.
Yeah, that's Emily, like, through and through.
Yeah.
Like, she's not just going to sit there and be like, oh, whatever you say, doctor. If she's like, eh, that actually doesn't sound quite right, she'll stand up for herself.
For yeah, sure. For sure.
Advocating for herself. It's important.
It is.
So with mammograms, Chuck, from what I've seen, nobody's saying, well, this is a kind of x-ray, so you don't want to build up, you know, the radiation. That doesn't seem to be the problem with overuse of mammograms. What seems to be the problem is that they that, well, a mammogram is an X-ray, and the X-ray is handed off to a radiologist, and they apparently are like 84, some high 80% effective at finding cancerous tumors in breasts.
Yeah, just 84.
Looking at an image of a breast, mm-hmm. this trained human being can say, yep, there you go, right there. Circle it, initial it, go follow this up. The follow-up it results in a biopsy, usually a needle prick biopsy, to remove some of the cells. Those are examined. And if those come back as suspicious, a doctor might say, we need to get those cells out. Most of the time, those aren't actually cancerous cells,
right.
but they're still being removed surgically, which is painful, costly, and can be a problem emotionally to have to go through that surgical procedure to have cells removed that you didn't need to have removed. That's the problem with mammograms as far as getting them frequently. And supposedly between ages 40 and 50, a woman has a 50 to 60% chance of getting a false positive result from a mammogram.
Yeah, man. I mean, a 60% chance?
Yeah. And again, no one's saying, oh, don't get a mammogram.
No,
they're
going to
just totally screw you up. It's more like medical community, we need a better way to keep an eye on breast cancer.
I mean, they're trying.
Sure they are. Of course they are.
And colorectal cancer is a perfect example. It is the second leading cancer-related death in the U.S. right now.
Mm-hmm.
What does it say here? 132,700 new diagnoses in 2015. And one of the big problems with colorectal cancer is that I'm saying a lot of people, but I think about 50% of people don't follow up on a recommendation to get a colonoscopy because they don't want to get a colonoscopy.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Have you got one of those?
Not yet.
No, I haven't either. I'm really, really not looking forward to it. And I was researching it today and just almost fainted like 3 or 4 times while I was reading the procedure about the procedure.
Yeah.
It's hardcore, man. There's like a finger width tube that they stick in your anus, past your rectum, up to your colon, the cecum, I think it is, which is the top of your colon, which is basically where your rib cage ends on your left side. That's your cecum. So they go all the way up there, and it has like a camera and a light on the end. And basically what they're doing is visually inspecting the inside of your colon. If they see something that they find suspicious, they can put forceps through the tube and take a sample of it and then just, come on back out. Normally they'll give you a sedative for this. They also give you, I can't remember the name of the drugs, but it basically makes you forget that it ever happened. Like it prevents you from forming memories during the procedure. But most people don't want to go through this, even though it's extremely effective. It finds like 92% of colorectal cancer, from what I understand.
Yeah, it's amazing that with like all the advances of medical science, they're literally saying like the best way is to really just get on up in there and take a look.
Just jam it up there. Get up there.
However, they do have some, because like we said, about 50% of people won't even get a colonoscopy when recommended.
Mm-hmm.
They have other tests now. They aren't as accurate, but at least they're trying to get another test on the table for people that are reticent to have the tube stuck up their butt.
Right. And some of them work. There's this one called Cologuard.
From Germany.
Yeah. They have a accuracy rate of 92%?
No. This one is, Cologuard was 92%.
That's high because, I'm sorry, I misspoke earlier. The colonoscopy catches 94%. So this stuff that you just poop into a cup and mail it in and some poor schmo tests it, right? That's 92%. That's really great.
Well, it's not quite. It showed 92% of the cancers that a colonoscopy would uncover.
Okay.
So that's not 92% overall.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
But it's still pretty good.
Right. But it has a high false positive rate of 13%, Which, I mean, if you think a tube up your butt will make your rectum pucker, so will a false positive of colorectal cancer.
Yeah, the German one, although that might be German too, but there's another German, actually this is a German study about stool tests, and that's when you literally are just looking at trace amounts of blood in the stool.
Well, some do.
That had accuracy all over the place. That was from 25 to 72%,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, that's such a wild swing.
Right.
That I don't know if I would opt for that.
One of them, so one of them, oh, some of them, I should say, probably most look for blood in the stool. Some look for DNA or genetic material of cancer in your stool. And another one looks for chemical changes of a certain gene that could be present in your stool. And by stool, of course, I mean poop, by the way, everybody. And they analyze them for this. And again, they're pretty good at catching the stuff, but they're also pretty good at giving false positives. So, I mean, that's just a great... The idea that we can catch like 94% of colorectal cancers with a colonoscopy, but 50% of people who need one don't go get it because it's such an awful procedure, that, like you were saying at the outset, like that begs for it, something new.
Yeah.
You want to take another break?
Yeah. Let's go prepare the finger-width tubes. We'll talk about drug testing right after this.
Okay.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
All right, so we've honed in on mostly medical testing up until this point.
Mm-hmm.
But if anyone's ever taken a drug test, there is always the risk of a weird false positive. You can be a clean liver and still get a test that said, hey, it says here that you smoked marijuana. And you can be like, dude, I don't and have never smoked marijuana. And then you have to plead, like, basically every athlete ever that's tested positive for anything
right.
says, well, I didn't do it, man. This is false positive.
They're like, whatever, stoner.
But it does. That's like the same thing with, my Twitter account was hacked.
Right.
It's like, really? Every time something awful came out on your Twitter feed, someone hacked it?
Yeah.
But Twitter hacking does happen. And true false positives in drug tests definitely happen.
Yeah, it depends on what you've been doing. Like if you are using a prescription medicine or even some over-the-counter medicines, you can come up with the false positive on a drug test.
Yeah, it says between 7 and 15 million people a year in the United States get a false positive drug test.
That's a lot. Because think about it. When, you know, if you're applying for a job and you go do the drug test and you go home and you hear that you got passed over for the job, I don't know if they tell you that it was because you failed your drug test. And even if they do, they're not going to be like, well, we want to hear your side of the story, Mr. Candidate number 927.
Yeah.
You know, they like you just lost out on a job because of a false positive. You lost out on a sports scholarship. You lost out on, I don't know, getting to deliver Meals on Wheels. Who knows? But you're going to miss out on something because of a failed drug test when you didn't do anything. You've been a straight arrow your whole life. But again, you made the mistake of not keeping up with what prescription medicines can give you false positives.
Yeah. And here's the thing, parents, if you drug test your kids, I'm not weighing in on that one way or the other, but if you drug test your kids and they return a positive test for marijuana and they say, Mom, that's because I was in the car with some people who were getting stoned. That's how it showed up. It's not true. I hate to break it to you, but that is not, you will not, I don't think you can ever get a false positive for marijuana from secondhand smoke.
Right. That's not your cue to burst into tears and grab Todd and go, oh, Todd, I knew you would never use drugs.
And Todd's winking at the camera, breaks the fourth wall and winks at the camera, Ferris Bueller style.
Yeah. Todd's stoked.
It did kind of remind me, though, because it said here that cocaine is one of the drugs that routinely do not come back with a false positive.
Or a false negative.
Yeah. It's kind of on the money.
That means they have a good test for it.
Well, yeah, but I kind of, that made me remember that old thing I used to hear that, like, whatever percentage of dollar bills has cocaine on it. And I thought that's totally not true and one of those things that you just hear in school. Mm-hmm. But I looked it up, and apparently that is totally true. There was a study just a few years ago in New York City by NYU, and they found that 80% of dollar bills had trace amounts of cocaine.
Yeah, some ridiculous amount of euros do, too.
Yeah, and not just cocaine. It's like there was some morphine, heroin, and meth in lower quantities, and then all manner of disgusting, gross things on paper money.
Right, which apparently people were using to roll into a tube and sticking into their nose to ingest drugs with.
Not were, but kind of always have.
So the idea that you can find drugs on money. Have you heard that there are like local laws around the country in the United States that say that police can confiscate money as drug money if they test it and it turns out that there's drug residue on it?
Well, but it sounds like it's 80% of money.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Not too cool.
What are some of the other things that can give you a false positive?
Aside from just jamming dollar bills in your nose?
Yeah.
So remember that Seinfeld where I think Elaine was supposed to go on a Jay Peterman trip, but she got disinvited because she turned up positive for heroin.
Yeah.
But it turns out that she was eating lemon poppy seed muffins every day.
Uh-huh.
That apparently is true, although this article, our How Stuff Works article, gets it wrong. So the poppy seeds don't actually contain opium, but when you're harvesting the seeds, opium can rub off onto the seeds. And depending
from people that were doing opium?
No. So they're harvesting opium from the poppies.
Oh.
And then they're harvesting seeds later.
Gotcha.
And then the seeds can come in contact with opium residue from the poppy plant. And then however well they're processed or not processed, by the time you eat them, they might have a substantial amount of opium on the outside of the shell, which will show up in a drug test.
Crazy. Seinfeld was correct. Apparently, ibuprofen can come back with a positive for marijuana, barbiturates, or bennies.
Mm-hmm. Bennies.
And
that was Jack Kerouac's drug of choice.
Well, one of several.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
But he really, I remember him writing about the bennies a lot.
Yeah.
That's how he wrote that book in like 48 hours.
Didn't he write that on like one long scrolling piece of paper?
That's what I've always heard. But last time I heard that, I was like 20 years old. So I've never looked into it since.
I think it's true.
Well,
I think I've seen
it. Jack Kerouac, let us know.
Some OTC cold and allergy medications apparently can result in positive tests for like amphetamines.
Mm-hmm.
It's It's crazy.
Yeah, well, you know that like if you're making bathtub crank, you can use Sudafed as like a precursor or an ingredient in just crank. And that's why you're only allowed to buy like one box at a time with a driver's license.
Such a 70s.
Well, yeah, if you're using over-the-counter Sudafed to make your meth, that's crank.
Yeah, it's crank. And then tonic water, surprisingly. Apparently quinine contains a little bit of the real quinine, which is a drug.
So here's the thing. I looked into this. I could not figure out why quinine would result in a positive test for heroin. Here's why, Chuck. You ready for this?
I'm ready because, you know, gin and tonics are my jam.
Okay. Well, just be careful because gin or tonic water does contain sometimes like 83 milligrams of quinine in it, which was a malaria drug, right? Well, back in the 30s, supposedly heroin dealers started adding quinine to their heroin to combat malaria. That was the urban legend. It turns out that's not the case at all. But quinine actually interacts with heroin in a way that kind of boosts it. And it also, more to the point, mimics heroin's bitter taste. So somebody would taste the heroin, and what they were tasting was quinine, but they thought they had like some dynamite skag on their hands. So it was really just kind of to take terrible junk and make it seem like it was much better by adding quinine. Apparently, this has been going on for so many years that that drug tests test for quinine because they consider that an indicator of the presence of heroin.
I think my big takeaway is here, is it quinine and not quinine?
I've heard both.
Oh, okay.
That's your big takeaway?
Uh-huh.
I was laying down gold.
Well, here's my deal is lately I've been buying the real deal tonics.
Yeah, like Fever Tree?
I hate to use the word artisan tonics.
Mm-hmm. But, you should.
But I've been buying the artisan tonics because they're delicious, and I've really embraced bitter as a taste that I can enjoy now.
Yeah.
Here in my late 40s. I've never liked bitter at all. But I'm kind of have come around to it a little bit.
Yeah, it is like the definition of an acquired taste, isn't it?
Yeah, but now I really like it. And, you know, these tonics that they make are like, they're made from the real, what's the root? The chincha, what is it?
Chinchilla.
It's not chinchilla.
Chinchona.
Is it chinchona?
I believe so.
Yeah. And that's like the key ingredient, right?
Yeah. From what I understand, it is the key ingredient in tonic water. I'm not an artisan tonic maker.
Yeah, chinchona bark.
So, I don't know if that's the key ingredient or if that's one of them. There's also like in white willow or something in that. Like an ingredient in aspirin is also in tonic water.
Yeah, I don't know. I enjoy it though, and it's the thing is you don't use a ton of it. You just use like an ounce and then some club soda or whatever. You have artisan soda water.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you're using artisan like tonic, not with any kind of fizz. You're using like the tonic.
Yes.
Oh, wow, man. That's hardcore.
It's, you know, it's like dark brown.
I gotcha.
And then you pour that in. It's like a couple ounces of gin, an ounce of that, and then top it off with some soda water. Give it a good shake.
Man, that sounds great.
It's really good. And it has
Can I come over today?
Sure. Come on over. I've started gin and tonic season early this year.
That's great.
Which is not good.
No, it's great is what
it is. Oh, okay. Yeah, it's not good. It's great.
Artisan tonic made from doomed goats.
They have some they have a one kind downstairs at the 1821.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Bitters place.
Yeah, and I like theirs okay, but then there's another one in Avondale Estates that I think I like theirs a little more.
So is there like a specific tonic or just like the general tonic that they have?
Well, the one in Avondale Estates has one called Dry Tonic and one called Robust Tonic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Robust just has a little more lime citrus. But they're both delicious and
bitter.
I got to
try this stuff. Man, nice work, Chuck.
I'm trying.
Yeah, steer clear of the drug tests. I'm pretty sure they're going to start instituting them at Stuff Media any day now.
You know, the only drug test I ever had to take my entire life was when I went through the adoption process.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Never had to take one for work or anything.
Nor have I, now that you mention it. I think we're in the minority.
You never had to drive a Bobcat for work?
I did, but the guy I worked for couldn't have cared less. He was insured to the teeth. Before we go, Chuck, you got anything else?
I got nothing else.
All right, so before we go, I found one test that is just supposed to be, it just seems to me like it's the gold standard for tests. It's an HIV screen, and it's called the Enzyme-Linked Immunosorbent Assay, or ELISA. I think we talked about it in our HIV two-parter.
Yeah.
This is how this test is performed. So you get this one screen, the ELISA screen. If it comes back positive, a second ELISA screen is performed. If that's positive, a separate test that uses an entirely different technique is performed. All this is in the lab before you ever hear your results. And that means that one, in the United States, one out of 250,000 tests show a false positive.
Whoa.
That means that it has a 0.000004% chance of returning a false positive.
That's
that
great.
That is a bomb test.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I got.
I got nothing else.
Go check out choosingwisely.org. It seems pretty interesting to me. And in the meantime, how about some listener mail?
Yeah, I'm going to call this email from Mr. Swedman's class. All right, this is actually from Mr. Swedman and not his class, but we're going to shout out his class in hopes that he starts incorporating this into his class. Hey guys, love the show on walruses. Wanted to chime in regarding reproductive isolation or reasons why different species don't mate. I have taught biology for several years, and evolutionary biology is always my favorite unit. Remember when we talked about reproductive isolation and what other different types of... like how that would manifest itself.
Mm-hmm, I remember.
So he says there are several types of reproductive isolation, and geographic isolation is one of them. And here's a little breakdown. Geographic isolation, when species live in different geographic regions. Mm-hmm. Ecological isolation, same region, different habitat.
Okay.
So yeah, they're in the same big city. They just don't hang out at the same clubs.
Different neighborhoods. Gotcha.
Behavioral. I always have trouble with that word. Isolation. One species mating behavior won't work on another. For instance, a peacock won't attract a chicken.
Right, because the peacock can't do cuck-a-chaw, cuck-a-chaw.
No, what does the peacock say?
Help.
That's right. Temporal isolation. Same area, but breed at different times. And that could be everything from the season to literally the time of day.
That's called two ships passing in the night reproductive isolation.
And that's like, I like morning sex. And the other one's like, shut up. I only like to have sex at night when I'm drunk. Then there's gametic isolation. Mating can occur, but sperm and egg won't mix.
Not you again.
And he says in this case, it's usually the egg releases a toxin that kills the sperm.
Quinine.
That's right. And finally, he said, my student's favorite type of reproductive isolation, mechanical isolation.
Sure.
That's when the parts don't fit.
No. It's like, just give me a second. Wait, I can do this. And then nothing.
He says, think square peg, round hole.
Sure. That's a really good way to put it. Way better than what I was saying.
So there you have it, guys. All the types of reproductive isolation. Now you know, and knowing is half the battle. G.I. Joe.
Nice job.
Don't stop believing, or whatever journey lyric guides your life. That is from Mr. Baird Swedman.
Thank you, Mr. Swedman.
I love that you added a C-H.
What is it, Swedman?
It's just Swedman, but I like Mr. Swedman.
Yeah, I have to call him Swedman.
Mr. Swedman from PS122.
Right, exactly. That's how I'm doing it. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Swedman. I'm sorry I got it wrong the first time, but Chuck said behavioral wrong, so we're even.
I could never say that right.
If you want to get in touch with us, especially if you are one of the fine teachers instructing America's youth or any youth of any country around the world, because we think everybody's great, you can tweet to us. We're at SYSK Podcast. I'm at Josh M. Clark. Chuck's at facebook.com/CharlesWChuckBryant. He's also on Twitter at Movie Crush. You can send us all an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, stuffyoushouldknow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.